Tonight is anniversary night. The format of tonight's meeting will be a main speaker who will speak for 25 minutes, followed by our information break and the anniversary celebrants. Our main speaker tonight is Roger.
Oh, hi everybody. I'm Roger, and I am an alcoholic. Thank you, Randy. Where are you? Thank you for asking me to speak. And at first, you know, she's like, you know, you only have 25 minutes tonight because it's anniversary. It's like ego deflation right there, everybody. It's amazing. When I was listening to that, they were reading the traditions, and I was like, oh, a loving God. Isn't that so nice? A loving God. And for me, I grew up a Catholic school, ringing bells, altar boys, like this is my world growing up, and it's so not my world anymore. But yet, you know, to be here is really beautiful. And, you know, my mom is really in this world, but, you know, many roads and one destination, right? So let me just say this. If drugs are my ship, alcohol is my ocean. You got it? I never was like, yeah, I'll have cocaine and a ginger ale. I drink. So let's talk about drinking. Schweppes. I grew up in, I'll keep this short, the drinking part. I grew up in New Rochelle, New York, which is hideous, if anybody knows it. Run the other way. It's hopelessness and despair. And my dad's a drunk. I didn't speak to my dad for the first 5 years of my recovery. I'm a firm believer with therapy and with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous that just because someone has the same DNA as you doesn't mean it requires a relationship. If that happens, how magnificent. But it is not a promise. For me, I'm lucky I got that. But we didn't speak for a while. I grew up feeling, you know, like we all do, just different and weird. And, you know, I grew up in an alcoholic household. My dad was this drunk, so my mom brought us to Alitot, Alateen, ACOA, Open AA, Anniversary AA, 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 AA. There'd be anniversary parties at my house. I would cry in my bedroom with my sister, who's sober 10 years more than me. And I would cry like, I hate these people. What are they doing here? And I'm like 7, and I hate them. Right? There's hate in my heart at 7, you know? And, you know, they'd always say, we're saving a seat for you. And I was like, I can't curse, but just imagine the finger that I have up right now to all of those people, you know? I was like, I'm not going to that. I'm not going there. And it made it very hard to come into AA, I will say. And, you know, growing up, I was afraid to go to school because I was made fun of a lot. I was just constantly made fun of. So I had to change schools a bunch when I was growing up. So I was afraid to go to school, and I was afraid to go home because my dad was really spooky. So there's the beginning of fear. And alcoholism, it's like fear is like the host. And even to this day, when I get scared, which I still do, 15 years almost later, when I get scared, this alcoholism goes, I got him. I got him. Oh, I got him. Let's just tell him one more scary thing about himself. And sometimes, as I've learned, I have this very unreliable narrator, and I can catch it. No, that's not true. I can't catch it. God and myself, you know, being an alcoholic is like being trapped in a box, but the directions are written on the outside of the box. The only way you can get out is if someone comes along and reads you the directions on how to get out. Otherwise, I'm like punching and kicking and trying to get out, but I need someone's help to get out. So sometimes I can catch this unreliable narrator with God and help in the preface, in chapter 1 of this novel. Some days I cannot distinguish the true from the false. You're ugly, you're fat, it's never going to work out. You're not going to get the job, you're going to lose your apartment, your mother's going to die. What's the matter with you? You're so ugly, don't look in the mirror today. I mean, it's relentless. At first when I got sober, it was like an incredible Dixie band with like drums and trombones and it was loud. But now it's a symphony, which is much more seductive. I'm like, oh, you know that movie Poltergeist? So I love that movie. There's this part where she talks about the kid being trapped in the house somewhere, right? Not the remake either, people. And she goes, listen, your daughter, she's talking about her kid, but it's alcoholism. She's like, listen, your daughter is safe and alive, and she's upstairs in this house somewhere. She's like, you know, she's with this thing that, like, lies to her. It tells her things only she believes. She kind of thinks it's a friend because she can't really tell the difference. But to you and I, it's the beast. And like, right, that little Tangina woman telling her like what it was in Poltergeist. So listen, I started drinking. You know, I was really young. I have different memories of drinking. You know, I grew up in Neuchâtel across the street from a Carvel. And I would go across the street to Carvel, and they have these big milkshakes. They're skinny milkshakes, and, you know, they're just like that. And I would go home, and I remember being like 7, 8 years old, and going into my liquor closet, into the alcohol was hidden away in my very Al-Anonic household, right? And I would get the Frangelica, or the Drambuie, or whatever that yucky stuff is that kids like, and I would dump some of my shake out, and I would pour it in the shake. I'm like 7. And I put it in, and I'm drinking it, and my sister's doing the same exact thing in her shake. And, like, we're walking around the house as, like, little kids. And mommy doesn't know that the kids are, like, extra happy tonight, you know, just drinking. And, like, something's wrong. Like, kids don't, 7-year-olds don't need to be drinking like that. Something's wrong. I'm so afraid of life. Not anymore. Some days I am, not as much. And then I was just afraid of life, afraid of people, afraid to leave my house. Fear, fear, fear. Thank God for drinking. Thank God, you know. Suicide is in my family. People committing, killing themselves in the beginning stages of decomposition from this disease. And almost what's on par with that is there are so many loveless relationships spattered throughout my family, rotting away from alcoholism. It's the thief in the night, this disease, right? And it's cloaked, right? It's like the shapeshifter. It's like the mask of Red Death. I'm like, how did you get in? And I don't know where you are, but you're here somewhere, right? This guy, Sam, used to say, I hate when people say your disease is, you know, in the parking lot doing push-ups. And he was like, no, the killer is in the house. The killer is in the house. Run. So listen, I drank a lot. I drank a lot. I drank a lot. I drank. I drank through high school. I was no longer the weird kid that everyone called a faggot and made fun of. I now was the kid whose parents were divorced, whose mother was away on the weekends, and you can come to my house and party and do drugs and drink. And I was like, oh, this kid's not as bad anymore. Let's go hang out with him. So I made friends that way. So it's how I associated hanging out with people was through drugs and alcohol. I don't think I ever had sober sex until I came into AA. I swear to God. And a part of me thinks that's what they're talking about when they talk about being rocketed to the fourth dimension beyond your existence, people. Because listen to me, to show up fully, I mean to really show up fully with another human being, our sex powers are God-given, and not to be misused, treated lightly, like to fully show up and not bail and to be utterly me with another person in that arena, that's intense for us. We're hiders. Right? We're negotiators. Right? Drink, drink, drink. I got sober eventually. Can we just get to that part? You can tell I have alcoholism, right? I drank a lot. Bad things happened in my life. I broke my nose. I never got it fixed. I got up off the table and I walked away. That person who I told you about that killed himself, it was my cousin Richard. I always talk about him. November 3rd is my birthday. I get a phone call on November 3rd. It's my sister. She says, listen, they found Richard. He was on a slip. He hung himself. He's in the beginning stages of decomposition. This was my response. I mean, I have dinner reservations. It's my birthday. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of all of our troubles. Me, I'm an engine of self. Me, 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 me. You're a parachute artist? Great, I want that job. Whatever. Me, I just want it. Even if I don't want it, I want it. I want the angle. How can I get in there? right? Because the problem's here, you know, like, I wish I had this a piece of paper on me, which I don't, because someone did this thing, which is really instrumental when I first got sober. So eventually, something happened. I came in AA in 2001. I didn't stay sober until April 2002. And, you know, something happened where I was a shell of myself. I was like, who are you? Like, who did you become? The walls, the windows are covered. I'm pouring blood in the bathroom from my nose, drinking in the shower, smoking cig. What happened to me? I mean, it's just like, I don't treat my body with respect. Horrible. What do? I call Intergroup because I know about AA from my family. So they send me to this meeting in Park Slope called Midday. And I walk in and I go and I'm like, I have a day, you know, I was 30. I hate when people are like, do the math. So I was 30, right? And I'm 45. And this guy comes up to me after the meeting and, you know, I have day one and this big guy comes up to me after the meeting. He's like, so did you tie one on last night? And I was like, get the hell away from me. It was like everything I thought AA was. This like Loserville, sexless, uneventful, horrible place that I was banished to for not drinking anymore. I knew it. And you know what? It's not true. AA is the most incredible place ever. The frequency which this room is vibrating on is tangible. And let me tell you something. We look damn good in this room right now, but every single person drank like a pig in this room. Look around. And chances are you would have hung out with some of these people in a bar anyway, right? I mean, chances are you would have found your people there. So you find your tribe in AA as well, too. And I went to NYU, and there was a woman sitting. It was in and out. Oh, I just told this story the other day at AA. I couldn't stay sober, man. I just couldn't stay sober. So I go to that church on the. I go to Perry Street. I'm strung out. I go to that church on the corner of 13th Street and 7th Avenue, and there's a lady vacuuming in the front. And you know, I go to church. I don't go to church. I'm just at my wit's end. And I go to the vacuum lady. I'm like, can I go in here? She's like, yeah, go ahead. I walk in. No one's there. I go to the front, there's a pew, I lay down in the pew and start crying, going, please help me, God, I can't stop drinking. Me, the guy who's like, I don't like God, I'm not into God, I don't want that, help me, God, please help me stop drinking. And I didn't stop drinking right after that, but something shifted in me. So April 30th, 2002 is my sober date. God bless you. And and there was a woman sitting at that meeting. And she looked at me while the meeting was going on, and she just was like, she was like, do you have a sponsor? And I was like, no. And she goes, me, I'm your sponsor. And how many of us are doing that? You know, it was so important because, like, someone saw me. It was that moment where someone was clocking me. And all of a sudden, I became friends with her. And you know why? Because she was hot. Because she smoked. She was an author. Darcy, if you ever listen to this woman, I love you. It was an outside job. I had no idea the inner stuff that we do in here, the plumbing that's happening in my body, this excavating of my soul, this spiritual gymnasium that's happening. I can't see that at first. At first, it's like, oh, you got a great job. You're really pretty. Got a nice apartment. I love the way you smoke. Let's go hang out and drink coffee. And then it's so much deeper what happens in AA. It's mind-blowing. I used to say getting sober was the best thing that's ever happened to me in my life. Now I say, finding this incredibly delicious God is the most incredible thing that's ever happened in my life. Yuck! Like, who would have thought I would ever say that? But it's really true, people. If I didn't have God in my life, I would collapse on the ground without that thing, without whatever to lean on. And for me, like I said, sometimes God is like great outdoors. That's what it stands for, G-O-D. I have this dog. Many people know this. Her name is Maggie. When I go to bed at night, I get on my knees. I pray. Maggie is right next to me. She's on her back. I put my mouth on her stomach, and I go, "Are you God? Is God in there?" And I start talking to her like that, because it can be anything you want. I was on the subway one day, and there was this woman on the train. It was a really crowded subway train, and there was this little boy on the train with his mom, and me and this little boy were having this moment with each other, you know, like you do sometimes with kids that you like, and like we're having this moment with each other, and all of a sudden, like it's time for them to get off, and this, it's time to get off. And the little kid looks at me, and he goes, the mom goes, "Come on, Roger, let's go." And I'm like, "Oh, I'm listening, God. I'm listening, God. You know, listen, I have made amends with like my dad, and you know, like heartbreaking stuff. And I just came out to my father as well. And I could have never done that with AA. I've had a sponsor in AA who, a sponsor who died, and like we brought him his last meeting, and we sat around the bed and read from the big book, and he's dying, this man. And as soon as we start reading from the big book, it was like we were reading from some spell book. He came to life, and we read A Vision for You, and what A Vision for You talks about was exactly what was happening in that room right there. Those are like highlights of my life. And he said to me, he said, "Roger, you're too young in your sobriety to know this, but not knowing is a state of grace. And the whole point of all of it, is not to know. Because when you don't know, then you're fully in the third step. When you're really going from step to step in the moment, you have no idea what's going to happen. Then you've given your life over to God." It's like, what? That's mind-blowing. And I've learned that stuff. I mean, I've had a hard, hard year. Surgeries, a breakup. I mean, just a hard year. And, you know, people are like, "Lean into the sharp edges." You know, it's like, ugh. You know. Listen, as a bumper sticker, that's great. But when it's happening to you in real time, it is hard. And just because it's hard and we're struggling doesn't mean it's bad. It will pass. The future is friendly. You know, this is my mantra lately. I keep saying, what if it all worked out? Like, what if everything actually worked out? Let's see if I can remember this. I was at a bookstore the other day, and I was reading this thing by Rumi. I don't know if I'm going to remember this. And there was this quote that says, "Dust settles upon my head and upon my metaphor. Dust settles upon my head and upon my metaphor. For you are beyond anything we could ever think or say. And yet this servant cannot stop trying to explain your beauty. In every moment, let my soul be your carpet." I mean, let my soul be your carpet. Yes, yes, God. A prayer that I learned this year is, I love you, God. Be with me, God. Let me see me how you see me, God. Because the way that I get hijacked and can talk to myself, it's relentless. Do I pray and meditate sometimes? Yes, I do. Daily. I pray every day. Pray and meditate every day. Step work, sponsor, sponsees, go to me. It takes a village to keep this like this. You know, it just does. That's the nature of it. Has it gotten easier? I don't know. It's gotten different. You know, there are plateaus. I mean, this past year was really rough in that, you know, listen, I had surgery a year and a half ago, and boy, I got humbled by that. One after another, right? I was training to be on that show, American Ninja Warrior, because I'm crazy. I love that show. And then I hurt myself, right? And what happened was my body changed. And as my body started to change, I was like, oh my God, you're so ugly. like, what happened to you? And all of these old voices started coming up, which I mean is great. I'm ready to hear them right now. But rough, the self-loathing, the, I love in the big book, it refers to alcoholism as excessive self-concentration. Got that? I mean, there's this other part of the big book in the back as well, where it's one of those, it's the father, the priest, I forget his name right now, and he says, Alcoholics Anonymous is natural. It's natural to the point where nature comes closest to the supernatural. I mean, that's what it says. They're talking about supernatural things in that book. For me, I'm so into it because, listen, we had to find a power greater than ourselves that was going to solve all of our problems. Well, how are we to do that? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main purpose is to enable you, the reader, to find a power greater than yourself so you can solve your problem. For me, that's incredible. It's this, like, cookbook. It's like, follow this, you get this. It's, these guys were renegades, cowboys in the 30s. To write something like this was heresy, right? To go like, go out and do this and go find your own God. They're like cowboys of this mysticism, which turns me on. I am into it. This past year, did I feel like drinking? Like once or twice, for sure. Totally. Because I was so uncomfortable. And I had a doctor say to me recently, because I was flying to Australia for work. Sounds fancy, but it's not. Although I did have my own pod, so it was kind of fancy. I know. He said, he goes, listen, if you're anxious, I can just give you a Klonopin. Okay, right? That was months ago. And do you know that I think about that sentence every day? I'm not doing it because that's not our solution, he says rather opinionatedly. And I mean, this is so weird, right? I mean, like, this is my life. And this is my life, and it's what we're aiming for. There's this artist downtown named Alex Gray, and he goes, some people are so tripped out by the word God that God has a secret code name, which is love. And I'm like, oh, I can get behind that. Love's atomic. I can believe in the power of love. I can feel that. Lately, I have been feeling wildly lonely. Ugh. And then, of course, someone is like, well, loneliness is nothing to solve. And I'm like, shh, get away from me. Get away. And, you know, I've had to sit with myself. And lately when, you know, when I walk my dog at night and it's cold and the moon is out, I walk down the street and I'm literally going, well, hello, God. What's going on? And people just think I'm talking to my dog, which I kind of am, you know, and outside. And I have this great relationship with that God. Now, how did that come about? Of course, by like going through this stuff, these steps, right? In my opinion, if you come to AA, right? And over time, you don't do this work, but you feel like killing yourself, you are in the right place, right? Life gets worse if we don't do this work for us, for this brand of hopeless alcoholic. There's other ways to go about doing it. But for me, I will be wildly restless. I will just do things I can't even talk about at this microphone. You know, bad. You know, you've done them, my friends, maybe even today. So for me, going through this work and doing that work is able to like find a God. So like you do this fourth step and you do this fifth step and then what happens, right? The fourth step, you know, luckily I start to discover these things who I'm not. I'm not those things in 4 and 5. Those are the things that I just picked up in order to navigate through this world. My therapist said something to me really great the other day. He goes, do you know what enlightenment is? And I go, what? And he goes, enlightenment is getting back to who we were before the wound. And I went, that's so nice. That's so nice. So recently, my sponsor, who I just love, had 30 years sober. And she invited all of her sponsees and her sponsors, and we were all at her house hanging out for this amazing event. And let me tell you something. I love my sponsor. I love her. And it was incredible to kind of sit there and to be so proud and to share this thing. And I left feeling higher than I ever have in my life with any kind of drug or drink. I felt so connected to God and the brilliance and the edges around trees and leaves and fully present in the moment. Listen, I always say this. God's address is now. That's where you write a letter to God. You write God now. That's where it's going to go on the postcard. The only place that God exists is right now. And in this moment, at 7:31, my life is perfect. Once I'm in 7:32, it's debatable. But if I can just stay in the now, and the steps of AA help me do that, that helps me stay present, reaching out to you people. So, you know, if I leave you with anything, it's like, you know, that Rumi quote of just like, let my soul be your carpet. God, that just feels so good to say. Okay, goodbye, everyone. That's it.